Evening, boys.
Evening, Sally.
Welcome to The Chatting, your local podcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Kirk.
I'm Mark.
And I'm the other Mark. 3 pints, Sally. And what are you having?
Oh, I'll have a dark and stormy.
Cheers. Offer to Mova.
Evening, boys.
Evening, Rob.
How are we doing? I'm all right. How are you? We all right?
All right.
Yeah.
All good. Thank you.
I've done a thing.
Oh, a good thing or a bad thing?
Uh-oh. Well, I think it's a good thing. Okay. I think it's a
very
good thing.
Let me just put my seatbelt on.
Okay. Well, you're smiling, so it looks good.
I've bought us a present.
Us?
Yeah.
All of us?
Us, all of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Is it a holiday?
When I pull it out. When I get this out,
was it a pickled chicken?
Straight away, it's going to give it away. So what it might be.
Okay. Well, okay. Yeah, it would.
You'd like to think.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Yeah. Oh. Drum roll.
For the benefit of the tape,
sponsored,
it is.
Sponsored by BrewDog.
We wish.
I think legally. Anyone from BrewDog listening, by all means.
Yeah. Mr. BrewDog, we'll leave that in.
What, is it a pair of trainers? Because it does look like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Have very small feet.
Yeah. I'm trying
you
to
put them on and it makes you feel drunk.
I'm trying to work out which way I have to open it so it gets the best reveal.
BrewDog,
but if I open it and it's the wrong way around, it all falls out.
Before you open it, it looks like there's going to be more than one each, whatever it is.
Well, it's obviously for all of us, so,
yeah,
so there is more than one.
Great, I'm just thinking how many cans I can get out of this.
It's a can.
Oh, it could,
wow. I'm intrigued.
Are they nuts?
Go on, get on with it. Film it, somebody.
Why would they put it in upside down?
This
is BrewDog upside down.
Oh, here we go.
That's it.
I mean, this reveal better
what
be worth it, if you want me to be honest.
Right, are you ready? I'm going to hold it up.
Da-da.
Da-da.
For the benefit of the tape.
Oh, what?
Is it? I can't see.
It says the chat in.
Oh, the chat in!
It says the chat in.
You can't drink them.
Can I zoom in?
So, for the you listeners, it's a box of our very own BrewDog chat-in beer with the Chatting logo and
that's incredible.
The
Rob,
Punk
that's,
IPA.
That's absolutely amazing.
So basically, just to give you a bit of background, it's the Punk IPA's 20th birthday.
Okay.
That blew my mind. I didn't think it had been out that long.
I can't
but
wait
it's BrewDog Punk IPA's 20th birthday, and as a celebration, they've allowed you to personalise their beer.
All right.
And I thought, what a perfect opportunity to have the Chatting's own beer.
That's fantastic.
The only thing I'm annoyed at is I couldn't fit the on, so it just says chatting.
Oh, well,
I was
that's
like,
that's brilliant, that Rob.
That's
absolutely
funny, isn't
brilliant.
It?
This is.
I just
great
can't believe
stuff.
We've not got the beer mats printed yet to put them on.
I know, right?
You know, that would be the full
work in progress, isn't it? Work in progress. This is great, Rob.
I know this is probably slightly underwhelming for you listening, but what I'll do is we'll put a photo of it on our socials. So if you head to the socials, look at the photos, and you'll see it on there exactly what it looks like.
Mark's
just throwing it around the pub.
And if Mark nearly dropped it, I definitely will.
I hope our listeners are as excited as we are.
I know, I'm really excited.
We're super excited about this.
It's brilliant, that, isn't it? The thing is, you can't open them.
I know. I were a bit like, you can't really open them.
Just don't let Sally see them.
I know.
Or
she will be out.
Sally, I know.
Yeah, she'll not be happy.
Contraband. So there's 6 beers. So there's 2 each.
Oh, brilliant.
And the glass, I'll leave at the pub. Because
there's only one glass.
There's only one glass.
I'll have that then.
Well, we'll leave it in and we can drink out of it whenever
we'll put it in a box for him and we'll mount it.
That's brilliant. Well done,
thank you, Rob. Thank you for that. That's very thoughtful.
Fantastic, that. Brilliant.
Little present from me, boys.
And you're going to put it on the socials?
Yes.
So 100%. Yeah, brilliant. Speaking of socials, I saw a video the other day, right?
Right.
And it did get me thinking, because I know, obviously, a lot of videos on socials and stuff, but it did get me thinking. So it was somebody that had encrusted a steak.
Encrusted?
Encrusted.
All right, is that
a
word?
Steak, covered, okay. In 24 karat gold leaf.
No. Sorry, did you say encrusted a stick?
A steak.
Like,
oh, yeah, so look at my.
Open your lugoles.
Look at my 24 karat twig.
A steak.
All right, steak. Okay, yeah.
So
yeah,
I think it was originally kind of done. The idea was born by, you know, can you remember Salt Bay? Is that how you pronounce it? Salt Bay?
Yeah.
Is
that the guy from Greece?
Salt down his elbow.
Yeah, like dropped it down his elbow, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think he did it first. And now, obviously, more people have jumped on bandwagon with it. But it did get me thinking, because gold surely doesn't taste of anything. I mean, the closest I've got is that drink. What do they call that? Goldschlager, was it? That drink that used with flecks of gold.
I do remember flecks of gold in.
Yeah, I do remember. Was there a vodka or something that had?
I think there were. Cinnamon one, weren't it?
Yeah, I remember.
They reckoned that the gold would scratch the inside of your throat.
I was just about to say.
So you'd get alcohol.
Since when did metal become edible?
Yeah.
But like, no matter how thin.
I don't know.
But my question for it is does it make a difference to the steak or the food, or is it just a way of being able to charge an extortionate amount of money?
A million percent.
It's bloody ridiculous, is what it is.
A million percent. We can answer that. It's to put a price on the food, isn't it?
So that one from Salt Bay or whatever, when he did it, I think if I've researched it properly or whatever, that was $1,000 for the steak.
Jesus Christ.
Do you know what I mean? It's just silly people with silly money.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. They're that rich, they don't know what to spend the money on.
Exactly.
But they'll not just spend the money on it, they'll have to put it on social media.
But you say that, you know, they don't know what to spend the money on. Well, when you're that rich...
Does it matter?
That £1,000, it's not. They're not saying, well, I mean, it's expensive, but I can afford it. That £1,000 to them is what they would expect to... I imagine they don't go anywhere near McDonald's because they go, not touching that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It is a different mindset, isn't it? Because yeah. I remember having a conversation with Daisy about, she'd read online that Beyonce or something had all her wardrobe flown over to whatever country she was at because she didn't know what to wear. Sort of thing. So she had a whole wardrobe flown over or whatever. And she was like, oh, can you imagine what a nice place it would be to be able to afford to do that? And I was saying, but
don't forget to turn your lights off and save the planet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But
it's ludicrous.
But the mindset isn't even a mindset. When you're that rich, it isn't even a mindset of whether I can afford it. That doesn't even enter your head. It's a case of this is what I want, just make it happen.
Yeah.
There isn't even a question of whether something's... The question's asked of how much is that?
Yeah.
And that's when you know that you're in a different level.
Yeah. It's, for me, when you talk about the gold leaf thing, there's like certain foods that when you put them in the title of a dish, it becomes this...
luxury.
It becomes luxurious. Yeah. Truffle. Is it truffle or truffle oil? I mean, the really low ones, it's truffle oil. Yeah. And then everyone goes, oh, it's got truffle oil. Now it's the truffle part that's the important bit. Or is it shiitake mushrooms or something else? Is some
shit take.
Yeah, shiitake mushrooms are quite just normal.
Are they just normal?
Well,
I know there's some particular...
But I know what you mean,
There's a particular mushroom,
when you talk about stuff like that with a 24-carat leaf bloody steak or whatever, I think it's obscene.
Yeah, I think
it's obscene.
So would you buy it even if you had the money then? So even if you were...
I don't think I could.
No?
I don't think I could. I just look at it. It goes above, you know, you can have something nice to eat. You can just have something nice to eat, can't you?
Yeah.
You don't have to pay £1,000 for something that's bling or something that's novel or something. And I don't get it, you know.
My thing on this is let's just put a spin on it and say that you could... Let's say that gold... leaf element of that steak was £700 worth of the actual product
that you're buying.
And at the same time, you could get caviar that would also be £700, right? The caviar element of it, as much as I don't particularly also wouldn't go, no, I'm not paying £700 for caviar, but at least there's a flavour to it, at least there's a profile to it that you go, well, it's adding something to the food.
Yeah.
The gold leaf, I mean, it's purely an aesthetic thing, surely.
Exactly. To me, this gold leaf thing is just like watercress on a sandwich. That is because watercress doesn't
add... Can you remember growing watercress at school?
Yeah.
What did you call
it? It is!
Cotton wool.
Them trays, what were they called?
Petri dishes.
We used egg boxes.
Slate.
Well, they did in 1890.
Yeah. No, I think that there's a pompousness in there. I mean, one that springs to mind for me, always springs to mind, and you see it on TV when they're talking about, and chefs are cooking stuff, and what the bloody hell is a panna cotta? What is it?
Is it a dessert?
Over to our chefs.
I don't know. Yeah. What the bloody hell is it?
Panna cotta's a dessert. Is it not like a creme brulee style thing?
Yeah, it's more set creme brulee.
A what?
So like a...
Mark.
Yeah.
What's the kitchen?
Okay, jelly.
Now, see?
Oh. With milk in.
Yeah. Jelly with milk in, yeah.
Oh, so like an Angel Delight?
Yeah. How old are you?
Do you know what? I mean, I don't know why, you know, I mean...
Where did you go that had panna cotta on the menu?
It's what you see on telly. I don't go to places like that. Do you know what I mean? I'm not bothered. I can go for something nice to eat. You know, there's local pubs near me that do some really nice quality food, you know, and it's of a good, really good standard. And I think, you know what? That's really nice. Why would I want to go and spend, you know, hundreds of pounds on stuff and be like, and have the exact same result and go, oh, that was nice. Oh, and I'm also full when I go, do you know what? Tourists went out for something to eat and whatever, and you know.
Is there a way in which you could be tempted to have that type of thing if, for instance, the expensive price that was put on this was because it was an experience rather than just a dish?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm probably not a foodie anyway, so I wouldn't get excited like some people would. I do like, obviously, I like my food to be nice, obviously. I'm not going to, you know, eat something that's, you know, tastes awful or bland or whatever. But I don't understand how I couldn't bring myself to pay, you know, there's people out there starving and go and spend almost like a month's shopping budget, if you like, on a meal.
So it's just about the
extravagance.
So it's just about the money, though.
I think it's the extravagance. I think because I don't see what it achieves over eating something from somewhere else.
But that's easy to say if you've never tried it, though.
I suppose. I mean, I have been to some nice place and eaten nice food. But I've not paid hundreds of pounds for food. Do you know what I'm... And I'm not talking... I'm not comparing these restaurants to, like, Wetherspoons. I'm talking... You know, I'm talking... When I talk about these pubs that serve food, they've got chefs that, you know, they cook to a really good standard.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a nice steak, you can have, you know, seafood platters and all, you know, they, you know... And I just think you can have really nice food, but you don't have to be, you know... Like,
extravagant.
I think that it borders on obscene.
Yep.
You know,
there's a reason why I asked you what I asked you a second ago, because I recently did something that I've actually done before, and a part of me was just about to say, I see them as experiences, and that I would, if I'm ever going to pay quite a bit of money for something, it's normally something that I think I won't ever do this again. So I'll do it, I'll take it as an experience, and that's what I'm paying for. I'm not just paying for a gold leaf steak. I'm paying for the experience of doing it and going, oh, that's me, I'll never be doing that again. What I did a month ago, maybe just over a month ago, went to London and went to a restaurant called Dan's Le Noir. It stands for dining in the dark. So you eat your meal in pitch black.
Which you can do that at home, do you know what I mean?
But when I say pitch black, I mean... You cannot see a single thing. So that when you arrive, the first thing you do, they take any light-emitting devices off you. Watches, iPhones, anything that emits light.
So this restaurant's run by pickpockets?
Yep. And it goes in a locker.
Yeah.
And then all the waiters that work there are either completely blind or partially blind, but all mainly, but completely blind.
So the experience is that you're sharing their experience.
A little bit, yeah.
Right.
So you arrive, you give them all your things, you've pre-booked in, and before you go in, you're literally standing behind like two very thick curtains in a doorway, and you have to place your right hand on the person's shoulder in front of you, and the first person that leads you is your waiter, who obviously knows the restaurant inside. And you basically follow them in, and it's so funny because you start. Absolutely. You start walking in, you're dead cocky. You go through the first curtain, it gets dark. You're all right. Your steps are normal. You get through the second curtain, and all of a sudden your world has changed. Like, it is so dark. I can't tell you. I've never experienced dark like it. And your walking changes to a shuffle because you then go, I'm uncomfortable. It's that dark that I can't see anything. And you can hear this ambience of music, there's no music, of voices. And it's so loud. And I bet it's no louder than any other.
Absolutely.
It's just because your senses are so heightened. And you start to shuffle, and the waiter will take you to your chair, take the hand off your shoulder, put it on the back of your chair, There's your chair, sir. And you have to find you. You've got to sit down and find the table. There's no
Does
way.
Does he pull it away when you go and sit on it?
Yeah, we've got another one.
And yeah, I remember when we sat down. So bear in mind, I said that this is the second time we went. So the first time it was just me and Gemma. And the only reason why I went back again is because we went back with Gemma's sister and her husband. So it was a shared experience this time. You know when you want to do something with someone that you know is awesome?
You wanted to see the faces but forgot it were in pitch black.
Yeah, exactly that.
But I bet all you can hear is people like clanging on plates with knives and forks because they can't see or feel what they're doing.
Why use a knife and fork?
Do you not use a knife and fork? Hands?
Why not? No one can see you.
What, mashed potato?
And gravy,
Can you imagine using a knife and fork when you don't know where you're putting it or what you're doing?
That's what
fingers, you can feel it, so you know where it is.
Right.
So you don't have to use a knife and fork. So the whole experience from what you think of what you would do in a restaurant, it all goes out the window.
Yeah.
You don't know, where's your drink? What drink? You've got water, you've got wine, you've got a cocktail.
So does everyone come out just covered in food and drink?
Well, surprisingly, I go to Witherspoon's and come out covered in food and drink. I went there.
You're going on a Saturday night, that's why.
I was spotless.
Yeah?
Absolutely spotless, yeah.
But what are you eating though?
You're really cautious about everything.
So here's the thing about it. You don't know what you're eating. That's the whole part of it. You don't know what you're eating. So
Can I just ask then? You're not choosing from... I know you can't see the menu, but you're not choosing a menu prior.
You pick from a vegetarian/vegan menu.
Right.
Meat menu or fish menu. I think they were the options. Or Chef Special, which Chef Special has a bit of everything in, right? So, and that's all you know.
So they could be serving you McDonald's then, really?
Absolutely. I mean, you'd know, but yeah.
Yeah.
So you go in, you eat the food, you enjoy the experience, and when you come out, they then give you an iPad and show you what you've just eaten. And the experience, honestly, incredible.
Yeah.
So to say that cost us, I can't be exact here, but I think it was roughly... £140 per person.
Okay.
But it's the experience.
Yeah, and so what you're talking about there is probably outside of the food.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, you don't know what you're ordering. Yep. So you're not going, I want the 24 carat leaf steak, whatever, panna cotta this and whatever else, and, you know, foie gras. Don't get me started on that, by the way.
No, please, start on it. Go on.
You've effectively gone into almost what sounds like an escape room where that serves food.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And also, I think there's a, you know, the people that are working in there, blind, partially sighted, or whatever, it's giving them an opportunity to work in an industry where they probably wouldn't have a chance.
Yeah.
So, I think that probably stands on its own in that respect.
And that's all I meant by there's some things that are food related that you're doing it more for the experience than the food.
But when does that experience become acceptable though? Because like you've kind of gone from like almost like it's extravagant, it's ridiculous and stuff like that, to obviously Rob's explained, you know, that experience. Yeah. And I think you in your head you've kind of gone, okay, well that's a very standalone thing. That's a different experience. But surely then it becomes down to each person's like where they draw the line of the experience.
Mm.
So like for instance, you know, there was another pop-up restaurant that opened in Elephant and Castle in London a few years ago called Raw.
Right.
And
you're kidding me.
Don't say it's Raw.
What
the food?
Yeah, so they don't cook anything. Everything, all the menu is cooked. Everything that's brought to you.
Me and Mark's booking
is a butcher's.
Is raw.
You walk into a butcher's with a knife and fork. Yeah,
I haven't even got to the best twist yet.
Oh, here we go.
So
you got to cook it yourself.
No.
It's raw, Mark. It's raw.
Everyone's naked.
So is this in? You can see people.
Mark's ears have just pricked up.
Yeah, it's closed now, Mark. Sorry, it's closed.
It's not in the dark, then?
No, it's not in the dark. You walk in, you get given a dressing gown. By the way, just for context, I've never been. It's only somebody else that told someone I know that's been. And obviously, I read about it. But you go in, you get given a dressing robe, if you like. You take your clothes off, put the robe on, you get brought round. You take your dressing gown robe off and then you get sent to your table, so everyone around you is naked. Now the thing is it were like in little booths, so you can see other people, but it's not completely open. Do you get what I mean? You have got a little bit of privacy there.
I bet nobody's walking to the toilet, are they?
So my question is, now ignore the fact that that's not something that you'd like to do, right? I understand that. But is that classed as an experience? Is that acceptable
so
enough?
I think we've moved away a little bit from what we were talking about in terms of the social, we have. I'm going there because it's a, you know, X many stars, whatever, and it's £500 for a dinner or whatever else. I'd say what, on a side note, I don't know if you've ever done this. When you've slept without your boxes on, for example, and you're good at toilet, you walk back, don't you? And it's, you know, we're blokes of a certain age. There is sometimes a bit of an aftermath, isn't there? Do you know what I mean?
Drip.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. You're walking through a restaurant.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Peeing all over the floor, effect. Do you know what I mean?
I'm assuming they expect you to adequately wipe.
I would rather go to this Wetherspoons. I think at least you know that they're going to be doing that.
I mean, what if you'd gone to the toilet and you'd be friend number two when you're coming back? I mean, are you going, well, have I done... Have a clean.
Well, you know that, but you learn that as a child, Mark. No. What I'm saying is, you get older, us bloke, we have this thing where our waterworks don't quite isolate like they used to.
No, I don't mean me personally, but some people's gonna be going at the toilet going, I've just done
Mark's,
number two.
Mark's got an Ansel and Gretel go.
I don't mean me. But for people in restaurants.
we're not going there again.
So to go back to Kirk's point.
Yeah.
Firstly, would any of you go?
Yes.
I 100% would go.
Hang on, we're talking about the naked restaurant. Would you go?
No. Yeah, I would.
No. I don't see what the hype would be, and I'd also feel really uncomfortable eating with no, because I'm quite a sloppy eater. Do you know what I mean? I'd need a bib, and you know. But I think what you've talked about, Rob, we're going to somewhere where you're getting served by people who are partially sighted or blind, and then you get to share their experience whilst they're, so you're living in their world. That's a shared experience, that. Mm. And I think to some extent, probably gives you a little bit of an insight into what it might be to live like that. Yeah. So I think that stands outside of what I'm talking about with, you know, where you get these dishes where they'll serve like an egg cup of your mashed potato and a drizzle of gravy that's written in your initials and, you know, and then, you know what I mean? And I just think...
Yeah.
I think
I get what you're saying. I do get what you're saying, but I think what you've done is taken an extreme example of how something's plated and then matched it together with an extreme version of very low quality food. When at the end of the day, it's not, if you go to like a Michelin starred restaurant, it's not an egg cup of just normal mashed potato and gravy written in your initials. So yes, it looks what you would class as pompous or whatever it is on a plate, but actually in a lot slash most of your high-end restaurants and stuff like that, it's not just normal mashed potato, or it's not just... So I get what you're saying about certain...
Mashed potatoes from Mars?
So I get... No, I guess...
Do you know what I mean?
No, but they're not mashed potatoes. The end of the day, I get what you're saying about a restaurant trying to be something that it's not. So I get that. I get a restaurant going, right, we're serving sausage and mash, but we're going to do it as deconstructed and, you know, this, and then put it on a plate differently, and I'm going to charge £50 for it. Then you kind of go, well, no, this is sausage and mash, and you shouldn't be charging £50 for it. But there's then a difference between a Michelin-starred restaurant that's just spent the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years trying to achieve to be a Michelin restaurant, which has got chefs in it that have been working in the industry since they were 15, 16 year old, perfecting their art to get to that point. What's wrong with that? Look, has any of you around the table been to a Michelin starred restaurant?
I feel like I have.
I've been to that Witherspoon's in Liverpool. Is that one?
Well, yeah. I can say that us three have all had Michelin star, because one of the restaurants we ate on one of the cruise ships was a Michelin star chef. So, was it a restaurant? No, but we have been cooked by a Michelin star chef.
Yes.
So, I guess the answer is yes. But does that meet you?
I'm a bit like this with this food thing. I'm like, there's a difference between good food and, like, you know, just normal food. But then there's a line which I think me and Mark are in, where they go, well, there's a steak, it's cooked beautifully by a good chef, it's cooked really good. Okay, fine, it might be, I don't know, £40, £50 or whatever. Then they put a bit of this gold leaf on it, and suddenly now it's £700. Mm-hmm. It's that borderline where it trips over from a a good steak in a Michelin star restaurant, which, okay, I don't mind paying good money for it, type of thing, but then it goes to a different level.
Oh, by the way,
and it's that I'm a bit.
I'm with you. I'm with you on gimmicks. I'm with you on gimmicky stuff that doesn't add or anything to the meal. Yeah. So, like, I'm totally with you. Would I pay $1,000 for a steak just because it's got gold leaf on it? No. No, I wouldn't, and that's coming from someone that I would say that I am a foodie, and I do I wouldn't do that because I can't see what it brings to the food. I can't see what it does differently. But I have been to Michelin starred restaurants. I've been to Sat Bains in Nottingham, 2 Michelin starred. That I think it was around about £250 a head.
Yeah.
For a 10 course tasting menu, and that's what I'm saying. I think that. Both Marks here would probably look at me and go, that's just ridiculous to pay that kind of money for food. But I then revert back to what Rob was saying, that that's a memory for me. That's not something that I'm doing every week. It's not something that I'm doing every month. It was a special occasion. I took Daisy for her birthday. Bear in mind, Daisy used to be a chef. And that is a memory for me that will be with me forever, because the food was... It was exquisite. It was
an experience. It was an experience. It wasn't covered in a dark room, or you weren't naked.
And this,
it was an experience still.
And this is why I asked the question before of where do you draw the line on what becomes an experience? Like, if somebody could turn around to me now and said, well, what restaurant, if you could go to any restaurant anywhere in the world tomorrow, where would you want to go? And I'd say the Fat Duck. Heston Blumenthal.
Oh, okay.
The Fat Duck.
Now, has he only got one, or is this one restaurant that you're talking to about?
He's got a few different restaurants and stuff like that, but this is his main one. I think it's got about a 12-month waiting list or whatever. And I think the last time I looked, it's about £400 a head.
Jesus,
wow, going right. You know, but that is it's a 3 Michelin starred, and it's all about what's the word I'm looking for when it's like sciencey.
Yeah,
physics.
I know what you mean.
Gastronomy. Anyway, so it's all done. So, like, for instance, he has one of his courses is that it looks like a dessert, but it's not a dessert. It's, you know, it's savoury.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about playing with your senses.
We've been experiencing this on the cruise, didn't we?
Put salt in it.
We've been experiencing the cruise where it came in a doll's house that time, and each room had a different dish in with it.
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing.
It's like,
it?
Well, you know, one thing comes with a seashell, and it's meant to represent the sea and stuff. So again, to me, that's an experience. But again, I can just tell with the way that you're looking at me, that's not good enough because it's not served by a blind person.
No, not at all.
I mean, I like the idea of what Blooming Essentine does, because it's
Blooming Essentine. He were a politician, weren't he?
Is that not his name?
That Blooming Essentine.
Blooming Essentine.
They used to call Heseltine a lot worse.
Is that not his
Heston.
Name? Heston.
Blumenthal.
Blooming Essentine.
Blooming Essentine.
Is that not him?
Carry on.
He sounds like a Bobbiori.
That guy, anyway. I like what he does, because I think there's probably other, I'm going to say artists, there's probably other chefs doing it, but they're probably not as famous as him. But there's only him really doing that sort of thing, because there's an abundance of chefs doing all just normal stuff. Mm. So he's sort of kind of...
Where would you go?
Kind of quirky. Well, I would, but not for that price, because I know he's expensive, so I won't pay that, because why would I?
Yeah,
but I understand the experience.
Because I'm not a foodie, it's probably just not. I'm just not drawn to it because of, you know, we'll look for something nicer to eat at a certain place than we would do if, you know, than going to another, you know.
Yeah, but you'll never get that experience. So what I'm saying, and I'm not saying there's right or wrong, by the way, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, I get what you say, that you could go to a nice restaurant for a quarter of the price, if not an eighth of the price, and have something nice to eat.
Yes.
And absolutely.
And I'll be satisfied with that.
And then I could also turn around to you and say, yeah, but for an eighth of that price, you can go and get fed at Wetherspoons. What I'm saying is, but you will never have that experience. Well,
and I'm quite happy that I'll come out satisfied.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
I've enjoyed the company.
You've come out.
I've eaten some nice food, and I'll be full.
Yeah. You've come out fed, and we've come out with an experience. That's the difference.
Yeah.
One you fed, the other one you've had an experience. I get what you're saying.
I tell you what, just on a... I'm going to, on a side note, talking about celebrity chefs and whatever.
Yeah.
Did you know the chef, James Martin?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sunday morning, Monday, he does every day.
Yeah.
I think he cooks every day.
Yeah.
Yorkshire bloke, isn't it? Nice. Yeah. It seems like
he
a
comes
nice
across all right.
Yeah,
can I just say? But I'm gonna have to say this. It amazes me how he can. He genuinely is the male multitasker. He can cook and present at the same time. I've watched him. I'm in admiration. I'm like, how does he manage that?
Like, I think most TV chefs can.
Yeah.
I'm not watching any chefs where they know.
Although that was that. Is he the Kiwi guy that was on New Zealand? The guy that was on MasterChef, and he set his tea towel on fire. Can you remember?
On TV, yeah. It's on them blooper reels, isn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, so did you know that he once had a relationship with a James Bond producer, right? James Martin. Her first name was Barbara.
Yeah, I know. I know what her surname is.
Don't say it then. Like these two, I guess it was the same.
I know what it is.
Bond.
No.
Martin.
No.
Shall I?
Go on, Mark.
Is it Broccoli?
Yeah. Barbara Broccoli. It sounds like someone off Bob the Builder, doesn't it?
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going down to local greengrocers to see Barbara Broccoli.
a kid's cartoon that's made up of fruit and veg. Yeah.
I mean, that's... I'm gutted that they're not married. I mean, obviously, you would have wanted to... But yeah, she's one of the James Bond producers. Mm. And on another thing, do you know eggs? Eggs, you know, the egg, eggs. Eggs
will come out of hen's arses.
Well, I don't think they come out of their arses, do they? Ooh, sweet corn.
Yes.
Do you know there's a certain way you're supposed to store them? I didn't know this.
What, you eggs. Mean? You mean yeah. Which way round or where?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know, Kirk? Because you're into food.
Well, the only thing I do know is that you're not meant to store them in a fridge.
Unless you bought them from a fridge. So the rule is wherever you buy them from, that's how you store them. So if you buy them out of a fridge at a shop, yeah. Then you go home and you put them in the fridge.
Is that because...
If you buy them off a shelf in a store, then you go home and put them...
I've got a question there.
How did they get in the fridge? Is there a chicken in there with a cardigan on?
I've never been anywhere where there's been eggs in fridges. And if there is, then...
You take them out.
Why are they in the fridge?
I have no idea.
Because...
I was trying
to
say,
supermarkets don't have them in fridges.
Who put them in the fridge in the first place?
I don't know. I'm just saying that apparently that is the rule, that if you buy them from, you store them wherever you buy them from.
Right.
So go on, which way around are you storing?
So you're supposed to store eggs the pointy side down.
Ah, so basically put your egg cardboard thing upside down.
Upside down.
No. I think they're actually, and we probably don't notice this, when you go and buy eggs from the shop, they probably are already upside down in the box.
They're not in my box.
Are they not? They're pointy side up?
Yeah.
Oh, they're always pointy side up,
yeah.
Are they? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, I'd have to look.
But why?
Oh, no, they are 100% are.
Apparently they store for longer because it keeps the yolk away from the air.
Really?
Mm-hmm. From science. Yes, there you go. You can come to my restaurant, I'll charge you 85 quid for an egg.
While we're talking about restaurants, just another quirky thing. You know how some restaurants, I don't think it's been a recent thing, but you know how some restaurants have been serving food on various different, not plates, so like they'll serve them in various
lids.
Like dustbin lids or spades and spades and stuff
true.
Like that. I mean, what's your thought? I mean, you guys are going to go, oh, it's an experience.
Well, interestingly,
but what's your
interestingly,
thought?
The pub that I was referring to when I said it's nicer pub food than what you get from maybe like a Hungry Horse or something like that. The first time we went when it had opened, we went and didn't know that this was the case. And I was with, like, burgers and chips and whatever. And it was nice, you know, with the sticks through the middle. So your burger
is that what makes it nice, is it?
If a burger comes out with
a stick through the middle, it must be posh.
Yeah. And it run like a really small dustbin lid upside down. And I was like, what's all this about? Yeah. I didn't want... However, we've been back a few times since that. And now they've gone to the traditional method of putting them on plates. Which, for me, I don't understand why you wouldn't.
These days, you can't even go to Witherspoon's. They'll serve... an Indian dish in some sort of tagine or something. They like to present it in something that's a little bit more fitting with the...
But that's more tradition, isn't it? I mean, getting you served on a dustbin lid, that's no tradition anywhere, is it? Come on. Look, but you know what I mean? Quirky things.
Look, I'm all up for anything and anyone trying something new. Because at the end of the day, it's all a business. It's all about getting people to go and dine in your restaurants or whatever. And there's that much competition out there and stuff, then I'm all up for people trying something different. And I don't, for me, although I can't give you the answer why they did it, but my brain works, well, why not? If it doesn't hinder your experience in any way, shape,
or
form.
Yeah, as long as that spade hadn't dug someone's grave, I'm okay.
Well, we don't know, do we?
Do you know what I mean? So it's like for me, whether it's on a plate or whether it's on a shovel, whether it's on a dustbin lid, you know,
for me, it is about creating something. It is about creating a bit of theatre. You know, when something comes out and it's smoking, it's got dry ice and, you know, stuff like that. Why not? Why not?
I mean, it would be pretty unique. And they say, here you go, you're going to eat that with two table tennis paddles. You know, slapping yourself in face with bangers and mash.
I've just got a vision now of being served a dessert on a spade that was dug someone's grave and it's called Death by Chocolate.
Oh, very nice. Trademark that name.
Talking our experiences, and I don't think it's one of these posh places. In fact, I know... To the contrary, and you'll know as soon as I say it. Would any of you ever entertain going to Karen's Diner, the one where the waitresses swear at you and whatever? And
oh no, I am.
They're rude and stuff.
I would consider going there. Although I have a question about that because you guys know what a Karen's Diner is. First of all,
yeah.
So we all know.
Daisy's been.
So for the benefit of the viewers, Mark, just explain.
Viewers,
we've all graded. For the benefit of the tape, just explain to our listeners what Karen's Diner
so
is.
So it's a restaurant where you go and you just get abused by the staff.
So my question is, like, is I've never been, but if like you complain, they'll start kicking off with you and just, you know, just be whatever. Now what
they
if
like, like, I think when they come and they serve your plates,
they'll
like,
just throw it
like,
down,
throw them on the table and stuff, don't they?
Yeah. So my question is, right, what if you've got a genuine complaint about you? a genuine complaint.
You probably have to wait till you get home.
They're not going to do it.
And email them.
I mean, what if your food is generally cold? Or do they serve it cold?
How did I know that if anyone were going to think like that, it'd be Mark.
But it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to give you room to really, really complain. But I'd be really uncomfortable. Well, I don't know, actually. I suppose
it would make me feel... And I am pretty... I love
quite
stuff
like it.
That. But even the thought makes me feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, really?
Knowing whether you could say something and whether you're actually crossing the line.
What
or,
about you, Kirk? Would you break? Because I'm quite up for it. I quite fancy going.
Yeah, I would go. The thing is, what I really like about it is I just really like the fact that it's giving waiters, waitresses, you know, the chance to actually say what they want to say on a day-by-day basis, because, you know, I think we all know what it's like to deal with customers of some sort. And let's face it, you know, customers are twats. You know, people are horrible.
I mean, I bet they love their job, because, I mean, you're serving food and you're just going, well, whatever, I'm having a bad day, no matter.
I imagine there's times when they have to force it, because the people that are sat at the table might be lovely, but then I'll bet there's plenty of people that they just enjoy. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a character, and you've got to be a certain type of person. Everyone kind of thinks that it must be easy to work there or whatever, but it's not, because it's a character and you're acting.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about being quick-witted enough. It's about being, you know...
You've got to have all the put-downs, haven't you?
Literally, I think it were when Daisy went. I'm sure it were. They went, and the time were booked for something like 1:30. They went for lunch or whatever, and they got there for about 1:20. And they walked in, and they were like, oh, yeah, have you got a booking? Yeah, we've got a booking. What time's it for? 1:30. And they were like, so why are you here now, then?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And stuff like that. But that's just about being quick-witted and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I do, again, I just like anything different. I do like anything different. Well, why not?
When you said Karen's, I jumped in and were like, yeah, I've been there. And then realised, no, I haven't been there. I've been to Ellen's Stardust Diner, which is in New York. And that's where all the waiters and waitresses are all Broadway performers. Mm.
All right.
So
they
sing. There is one in London. It's not Ellen Stardust Diner. It's okay. It's nowhere near the calibre of what is in New York, as you can imagine, on Broadway. And that was amazing. Me and Gemma went to New York 7-8 years ago, whatever it was. And that was another amazing experience. Again, slightly inflated prices on what the food was probably worth, but you were sat being entertained.
You
were literally being by actual Broadway performers that might have been out of a musical and were working there to. And it was incredible, brilliant.
I'd just go in and go, listen, I'll just have a, like, you know, a toasted tea cake. I'll just listen to the entertainment.
Can I have a chip butter to take out?
I'm just saying,
the show starts. I'm just a bit hungry.
Can I have a chip?
Yeah.
So I've got something for you guys to see if you've ever heard. Have you ever heard of ghost kitchens?
Yes,
I have.
You have.
When you say ghost kitchens,
is
the name
kitchens
of a restaurant?
Or no,
or
ghost
kitchens.
Dark kitchens.
Those
or
are those containers, or, aren't they? Where they serve food under the banner of a restaurant.
Yeah.
And they.
So I've got mixed feelings about this. So
hold on.
So
you need to explain. Cause I don't know what they
first
are.
First of all, let's explain to Rob. So ghost kitchens, or dark kitchens, or cloud kitchens, or basically restaurants like in porter cabins. you know, I'm making it sound like they're dirty. They're not, but they, you know, they're out of town where you order food from them and they come from these porter cabin type places.
Oh, so it's not like you can go to a market and it's a metal container and that's what they're serving it from.
Yeah, it's not like a greasy spoon that you're going to sit
in
inside.
It could be a metal cargo. It could be a cargo. I mean, I'm not saying they're dirty. I'm not just saying where they are.
I'm saying, is it more about the takeaway element that
they
make them in there?
It's delivery. It's delivery. Yes, sorry.
Like, if you went to Sheffield Market and they've got loads of these things and they're like street food, but they're all in metal containers. Is that dark?
You could order like a Frankie and Benny's, and Frankie and Benny's would have a container. And that's what they would, and then that's what you would get.
So you can't visit. You can't physically go to them,
right?
So that's what they are. So what's obviously you, Mark and Kurt, you've heard them. I've got mixed thoughts on them. So what's your thoughts on them?
Well, can I just jump in straight away and say that Dragon's Den, 2 weeks ago, had a guy that had created an online app just like Just Eat, but you, me, Kurt, make the food in our houses and send it to other people's houses. Mm-hmm. So that to me is a very similar thing.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Well, I'll tell you what my thoughts are on it. Obviously, the thing is, I can see why they're doing it, but my thoughts are is that the problem I have with it to some degree is that if you're buying food, because some of these dark kitchens will make food for different brands in the same kitchen.
Yeah.
So if you're paying a particular price for a brand and it's coming from the same kitchen that you're getting unbranded food from, then I'm slightly uneasy regards to that because you don't really know where it's coming from.
Well, no, I get that, but does it matter where it's coming from? Because what you're actually paying for is the food.
Yeah.
You are paying for the food, but you're also to some degree paying for the brand.
Hold on
a minute. But the food, so let's say you've got a dark kitchen that's selling KFC, for argument's sake.
Yeah.
KFC sponsored by KFC. So, but what I'm saying is that product that you're getting from that place is still from, it's still KFC's product. So it's still KFC's chicken and it's still cooked how KFC say it should be cooked and it's still sent in the KFC box.
Can I just check, for anyone else that's not getting it? Are we saying that this metal container, you're not just buying, it's not, they've just made a name up of
sometimes,
sometimes
they do.
Something like
Dave's
macaroni cheese, right? I thought that it's just people making up their own restaurants and you then buy from their restaurants. What you're saying is I could buy a pizza from Pizza Hut and it's made not in a Pizza Hut building, it's made in a metal container, but using Pizza Hut's pizza bases and all their ingredients.
So let me just go back to Kurt. I understand what Kurt's saying, but that's a bad, because KFC or McDonald's don't use any of these things at all. I'm talking about like a brand as in, like a not a national brand but like a local brand within.
You need to give me an example.
I'm going
to
say,
well, a brand that might have got 12 Pizza Huts in London, it's Pizza Huts, pizza places in London, and they'll so KFC and McDonald's are not using any of these dark kitchens. So if you're buying it from a particular restaurant, then they've said they've got 12 of them in London, right, 12 restaurants, and you're buying the food from that restaurant, they're making the food in this dark kitchen. Yeah, but of course, if they're just making your chicken, chicken's chicken when they're just putting the sauce on it, and it's not made by that company.
So I think there's a bit of a darker side to it than what...
To the food hygiene point as well.
The food, they'll all be governed by food standards agencies. You'll have to be checked.
Well, they are.
You can't sell food out of a...
Well, they are, but the point is you can't check to see where that food's being made, and that's part of that's the part that I'm uneasy with.
Well, if you're ordering a takeaway, you're in the same boat anyway. So they're all governed by a food standards agency.
Yeah, but you can't check that. That's the whole point.
Well, you can, because you can see the rating on the internet.
Yeah, but that's for that restaurant, not that porter cabin. That porter cabin
not
does
the
not
dark
have,
restaurant.
No. The premise would have to be checked.
It does
legally.
It does, but you can't check it. That's the problem I have. I can't check the porter cabin's food hygiene.
You don't have to. The Food Standards Agency have.
Yeah, but I they have.
But and if you order a takeaway, you're not going to go to a takeaway and check the kitchen, then come home and order it, are you?
Yeah, but they've rated it a one.
Yeah, they've rated
it
a one.
Down,
but I can't.
Rated a one.
Yeah, so then you wouldn't order it. Yeah,
no, because you don't know it's a one.
I don't know it's a one.
I've looked for it, haven't I?
No, because under the banner of whatever restaurant chain they are.
And that's the bit I'm slightly uneasy with.
I'm with you now.
That's the bit I'm uneasy with.
The potential that name, but that branch of that name
exactly
is only a one.
So this is why I'm saying I'm a bit 50-50. I mean, I'm sort of with Kurt a little bit, but I'm also with the food hygiene bit.
Yeah, mine edges the other way in that, and could sound a bit of a hypocrite because we buy off places like Amazon and whatever. But there are some companies that are forced to use dark kitchens to be able to keep their overheads low because of their intermediaries, such as like Just Eats and those sort of companies, making such... they charge them for the services, for, you know, you sell through their website and they charge, I don't know, 20%, 30%, whatever they charge to be listed on their website. And then these companies are having to exist in dark kitchens to be able to be maintain, to be able to be able to be profitable, you know.
I agree.
And I think that's a sad thing for me, because it's almost like we're having a race to the bottom in, you know, what should exist, and do we really want to create a society where everything becomes so remote and so locked down and so industrious that the interaction's reduced. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I know that probably sounds a bit ridiculous, because if you're ordering a takeaway, you're ordering a takeaway. I think it's the reasoning behind why they exist for me.
Mm.
That's sad.
Well, go on.
Okay. Sorry, but then I totally with you. But then there is the other side, isn't there? The positive side of someone that may have got a really good idea for a takeaway or whatever it is, but can't afford
absolutely
owning a restaurant.
Absolutely.
And stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Actually,
if it gives them an outlet, then
gives them an outlet.
Exactly.
Them an outlet.
Yeah.
So
in that respect, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I do know, and I have read, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, and you know. But I do know that there have been stories and panoramas and, you know, these when they do these investigations into certain operators that charge intermediary, you know,
it
fees.
It can get ridiculous.
Like.
It can get ridiculous.
Yeah, and also where there have been independent takeaways, if you like, have been squeezed because although they pay the fee for being on there, another company will pay an additional fee to be listed number one,
yeah.
even though they're not number one.
Yeah.
And so
mm-hmm.
this guy might have a fantastic product and takeaway whatever, and he might be listed 15th in the queue because he's not paying as much as the next person, yeah. and almost held to ransom.
It's only like, I know it's going off on a little bit of a tangent, but it's only like booking.com, you know, and hotels.
Yeah.
It's now become an issue that hotels, I'm not going to say can't survive unless they're on booking.com, but it almost goes hand in hand.
The tail's wagging the dog, isn't it?
If you own a hotel, you've got to be on booking.com. Booking.com obviously get to a point where they can then push their commissions and mm-hmm. stuff, and that's exactly the same. You know, you start paying more commission, or you start paying to be sponsored.
It's almost like a protection racket, isn't it?
You become top of the
an operational protection racket.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is with the dark kitchens is, I think for me personally, like I said, I agree with, you know, like I said, I'm 50-50. It's the transparency. I think that's the key to this. Mm-hmm. It's, if there's transparency, I know where my food's coming from, I know what the food hygiene thing, then I'd be happy with it. There's no transparency.
Yeah.
If I'm ordering from that restaurant, I want it to come from that, but they don't tell me it's not coming from
that's
there.
Right.
It's coming from this port of cabin, and I don't know the food hygiene of it.
Yeah,
and that's the key.
That's,
so that's why I'm a bit like that with it.
I think I've noticed that over recent years, it's becoming a lot more frequent that people are having takeaways.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
just out of interest, how many takeaways do you guys have a month?
Oof.
I can easily answer that.
I can.
Before my Slimming World, before I was on Slimming World, I would say on average that our household, let's say, between me, Daisy, or the kids, I would say that we do three takeaways a week.
Really?
Yeah.
But that, to be fair to Kurt, that's below average.
Is it?
Yeah.
Below average?
Below average.
Yeah.
Yep.
See, for me, we would be
average.
Probably once a month, maybe once every 2 months.
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
We even make a joke that having a takeaway is a treat.
Well, that's what we say. Yeah.
Not from a money perspective.
No. Ooh,
yeah. We just don't do it.
In a way where you go, do you know what? Let's be naughty. Let's eat something fried.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
because
we do eat quite healthy.
And I can beat you on that, Rob. I'll average a month, zero.
Really?
Me and Aino, I would say, on a yearly basis, we have two, three at most.
Do you not think, though, that an element of it is your lifestyle when it comes to your jobs and stuff as well, though? So, like, for instance, all three of you in varying forms have either set shift patterns, you know what time you're finishing work, or your wives, you know what time they're finishing work, you know, stuff like that.
Do you know
Whereas between me and Daisy, for instance, we could have, you know, worked a 15-hour shift without even realising we were going to work a 15-hour shift.
Planning. So me and Gemma will probably cook on a Sunday, but we cook the meals for that week.
Yeah, but then what happens if you got called into work on that Sunday? You don't have... There's not an option for that to happen to you.
No, absolutely. And obviously, with the best luck in the world, we wouldn't both get called into work on the Sunday. So one of us will go, well, I'll sort the meal prep for this week. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I'm saying meal like we'd literally meal prep every day. We don't, but we might do a spag bol.
Yeah.
And that spag bol will portion into four portions and we'll portion them up. And then the other days of the week, when we're in and we're what should we have tonight? Oh, we've got some chicken in the fridge. We'll make chicken. But then on the nights where something catches up we didn't realise, that's a spag bol night because you didn't have time to make anything, but you've got it there because you've already made it.
I do think, though, that I think it's a lifestyle shift pattern thing we take takeaways. I think we are down. I think people...
I'm not so sure. You know, I see people locally, McDonald's pulling up, or somebody from McDonald's pulling up at bloody 10:30 on a Sunday morning, or, you know...
But what's wrong with that?
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's someone's choice. But I'm busy at work. I'm gonna order my breakfast from McDonald's.
And I'm gonna say,
we're only talking average here. I mean, you know, we can't speak for everyone.
I get what Kirk's saying. Like there are, and Kirk's one of them. People that literally they don't know what time they're gonna get home, and therefore it is a case of look, I don't want to cook now. You don't want to cook. It's 9:00. What's open? Well, they can deliver it in half an hour.
Yeah.
Then why not? It's ease. But I definitely think that, like when you say three a week, I would argue that you could probably have got that down to two by being a little bit more organised.
But I just want to be clear here. I just want to be really, really clear that, again, before I was on Slimming World and everything,
yeah, I know that.
That we ordered from takeaways because either A, we wanted to, or B, we couldn't be bothered.
Convenient.
To do anything. So on the odd occasion, yes, it's you've worked all day or this or that, absolutely. I was just saying that I'm just saying it makes a difference in people's lifestyle on what they do.
Yeah.
But I've ordered a takeaway 3 times in a day before.
Wow.
I've absolutely been in a situation where I've ordered McDonald's breakfast, Subway for lunch and then a Chinese for tea.
My Achilles heel is probably the same as many people when it comes to takeaways. If I've had a few pints and I think, do you know what?
That's every day for you, Mark, isn't it?
I just fancy a kebab. And they're rubbish, aren't they? They're rubbish.
Yeah.
And you just find something in your brain goes, you're drunk, you want a kebab. And you go, that's a great idea. Yeah. And then you wake up the next morning with your mouth like you've been licking a horse. And you're like, oh,
you probably have.
What part of the horse?
Yeah. Where are you getting your kebabs from? I like them.
And you're like, oh, what did I do that for? But then that probably goes for along with, why did I have 10 pints as well? But, you know.
Time at the bar, please.
So... I've done the typical me. I've been researching while you've been talking.
Okay.
Well, it intrigued me.
Pay no attention to us.
Well, it intrigued me. We spoke about like cost of food in restaurants and particular restaurants and being themed. And I just thought, what are the most extremes of these that we're talking about? Like, really, right? This is the most expensive dish, right? You'd be surprised by this, actually. Yeah, I'm going to read
it. Space.
It's better red.
I think... Oh, go on. Does it involve some sort of something that's already been digested?
No.
What?
No.
All right, okay, go on.
No.
Don't get Mark started.
All right, okay.
Right. I'm going to have to read this because it's really well written. Nestled amidst the picturesque English countryside, the Lyndeth Howe Country House is a delightful blend of rustic charm and opulent luxury, providing you a serene escape from the bustling streets of London.
Are you being paid to do this?
No. Within the exquisite English manor, guests are greeted and a selection of generously appointed rooms, pampering holistic treatments, and a renowned restaurant led by esteemed executive chef Mark Gilbert. Mark Gilbert, probably.
Yeah.
It just said, made it sound good. The inviting restaurant offers a delightful array of culinary delights, spanning from scrumptious breakfasts to sumptuous dinners, all culminating in the talk of the town. Yeah. Chef Gilbert's extraordinary chocolate pudding creation at an eye-watering £35,000. This is in the UK. Far beyond the ordinary snack pack or powdered jello packs, this divine chocolate pudding is a masterpiece crafted from 4 different exquisite Belgian chocolates, meticulously shaped into the form of a Fabergé egg. The velvety pudding is then lavishly layered with champagne jelly, adorned with shimmering edible gold leaf, and served alongside a bottle of top-shelf champagne and caviar, a true indulgence for the senses. Other ingredients include 24-carat gold and 2-carat diamond. What?
That's just ridiculous.
I'm absolutely with you. It's ridiculous.
How can you even eat diamond?
I don't know.
Why would you have fish eggs with a chocolate pudding?
Well, I'm not going to sit here and say, because at the end of the day, who am I to question whether that works or not? But when we talk about realms of ridiculousness, that is ridiculous. That price. For one,
you wouldn't have a fruit and nut and a crab stick, would you?
No.
I mean, how much is it costing him? It's not costing him £35,000 to make, is it?
It says, due to the intricacy involved in preparation, the jaw-dropping £35,000 Lindenthal chocolate pudding requires advanced booking of at least 2 weeks, affording Chef Gilbert ample time to perfect this extraordinary creation. Right, can I just say, look at it. It looks like something off your grandma's mantelpiece.
Well, listen, the point that I'm saying how much does that cost him to make? That don't cost him £35,000, does it?
No.
That's the point I'm saying.
Well, I mean...
He's probably walking out of there going, I've had somebody's pants down, I've knocked that up for £400.
I dare say,
24
carat gold and 2 carat of diamond. I'm guessing there is a slight cost to that. But what does that add? Nothing. Oh, and to answer your question, Kirk... was it the Kopi Luwak coffee you were talking about?
Coffee.
So that I literally just saw that as I was doing it. I was looking. It's made from coffee beans that have been eaten and excreted by Asian palm civets, C-I-V-E-T-S, a type of wild cat-like animal native to Indonesia.
So the most expensive coffee in the world has literally been shat out of an animal.
It costs $600. Wow. Wow, with hints of chocolate, caramel, and shit. It doesn't say that.
On that note,
absolutely.
It's been a pleasure, boys.
Yeah, I was going to order a takeaway.
See you next week.
Bye.
Do you have a dilemma? Maybe a burning question you're longing to be answered? Or you just want to get in touch with us? Why not drop us a voice note or a message over email at inthechat@gmail.com? That's two N's, not one N, because one N... It doesn't matter. In the chat at gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you.